You may not have a dog in this race, but that ain't what it's all about. It's the devil you can work with or the devil you hate. Come on and vote that fucker out. Vote that fucker out. Vote that fucker out. We gotta vote that fucker out. Fired.
I've had enough of this. I want to scream and shout. The only way to end this misery, we gotta vote that fucker out. Vote that fucker out. Vote that fucker out. Vote that fucker out.
Hi, this is Candy in Chicago for the Agency Podcast.
And Eugene in Toronto.
Hey, Eugene. I'm pretty excited about that song.
Me too. That's Vote That Fucker Out. It's by Amy Rigby, performed by Amy Rigby and Reckless Eric, with paintings by Reckless Eric.
That's right. Punk rock lives. Yay. And protest music lives.
Absolutely. And it sure is timely because... I hear there's an election going on in America.
I've heard that too. I hear it on and on and on, and I hope people go out and vote, and I hope people go and check out the YouTube video. You know, say hi to Amy Rigby and Reckless Eric on their in their comments on their YouTube page. Let them know you've listened to it. Let them know you voted. Give them some feedback and support them in any way you can.
And like and share that, that video. Please, let's get it out there.
Let's get it out there.
And we're really excited because we had a chance to sit down and chat with Amy Rigby the other day.
I know.
And it's fantastic. I'm really happy she found some time for us.
Oh, I just enjoyed it so much. I talked too much, but listen, she was amazing. She shared so much with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to go to that interview in just a second. But first, I want to encourage people to visit Amy's website, which is amyrigby.com. Mm-hmm. And there you're also going to find her blog, her Girl to City podcast, and store, so you can buy music and other things.
Please, that'd be fantastic. And her memoir is excellent, and you will really enjoy her podcast too.
So without further ado, we're going to go right to the interview. Today, we're very excited. We've got a special guest here at the agency. She's a singer, a songwriter, author of a fantastic memoir, Girl to City. We'd like to welcome Amy Rigby. Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
Hi, Amy. Great to hear your voice.
Hi, Candy. Nice to hear you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. We're just so excited that you're here. I was having like heart palpitations about an hour ago. So it's pretty cool.
You know, we both read Girl to City.
That's right.
And you've managed to create some magic in that book, in that I think both of us felt that by the end of it, we've known you for years.
Well, that's good. That's a compliment.
Definitely. And you know, Amy, it's funny because now, you know, I always thought, will I write a memoir or anything? Now I don't have to. I'm just going to tell people to read your book because I feel like I related to it so much.
Wow. That's like such a great compliment.
Thank you. Thanks
and
for being.
And also, we were in Toronto when you were in New York. And well, we didn't have CBGBs and like that. We had a scene that wasn't that different. You know, we even had sort of a resurgence of old time country music in at one point in the 80s.
What was the name of the club? I actually, and this didn't make it into the book, I'm sorry, but I did go and play in Toronto, and it was probably in about like 1985. And it was And there was, I saved the t-shirt for many years. I think I eventually got rid of it, but because it didn't fit me anymore. But it was, a whole bunch of us came up from New York. It was the world famous Blue Jays. I think the Dell Lords maybe, or I don't know. And so it was like a little, like a country punk show. My band at the time was Last Roundup, and it was at some club on, I think, Queen.
I want to say the Cameron.
It probably would have been the Cameron or the Horseshoe.
Or the Horseshoe, because the Horseshoe was a little bit bigger venue. I bet it was the Horseshoe.
Maybe. Yeah. I'll have to look it up. I'm sure I have some kind of notes about it somewhere.
At the time, we had a fellow here called Handsome Ned, who was single-handedly bringing country music to Queen Street.
Yeah, I definitely remember his name on the t-shirt.
Oh, wow.
So he probably organized this whole thing.
That would make sense. He had a radio show at the time, the Honky Tonk Hardwood Floor Show, and he was really promoting that kind of music. So he would have been totally into bringing you guys here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because the other part of your book I really enjoyed, of course, the 1980s in New York City, how amazing. And I was dating a crazy boyfriend. He might even hear this now, ex-boyfriend, Andrew, hello. But I would go to New York all the time and do nightclubbing and partying and check out the galleries. So I really related to your descriptions of that time too.
Oh, well, that's so cool. Do you remember where you would go?
Oh, God, yeah. Lucky Strike, Danceteria, Pyramid Club, CBGB, Berlin.
Yeah.
I was in Berlin. And when we came out around 4 a.m, there was a massive snowstorm that shut the whole city down for a day or two.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, you know, crazy things like that. I mean, I also used to cry when I got home because I was so afraid of being killed or mugged or something because it was cars were on fire on the street in the Lower East Side.
I know, it was so different. It was It's hard to believe it was the same place.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we opened up the podcast with your amazing song, Vote the Fucker Out. Thank you for doing a protest song and one that just doesn't mince with words.
Well, I just felt compelled. It was back in June when they were having that Trump rally in Oklahoma, and there was this video of this really perky family. The woman was like strumming a guitar, wearing a pink ball cap, and they were all just like jumping up and down, singing "Vote Trump, Vote Trump."
Oh, wow.
And I just thought, like, you know, we need a song that at least feels like not mournful, but, you know, kind of like almost jubilant, but yeah, just kind of gets your blood going and gets you excited. And then that song just like popped out. I don't think it's certainly not the most artful song I ever wrote. But
it's a direct action kind of song, isn't it?
It is.
And it's so strident. And I really like the video work on it as well. The paintings,
thanks.
Are they Eric's?
Those are Eric's paintings.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah, he did those I guess it was about 8 years ago. He and I were doing a crowdfunding Kickstarter campaign for, you know, to get one of the last record we made together out, and so we were coming up with rewards and. we both went to art school, as I know you guys did.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he'd do some paintings as rewards, and his paintings were just so great. And that kind of, he just got interested in painting again, something he hadn't really done in years. And he just like knocks out these really great expressive, paintings. And yeah, so he did like a set of them for
it works great with the song. And they do. And I looked the other day, there's I think 36,000 downloads.
Good. Yeah, yeah. So somebody awesome. a friend was like, I thought it was gonna go viral, I thought it was gonna be really popular. And I was like, you know, by our standards, I'm feeling pretty good about it. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Would feel very good about it. And we're going to work on that today. Please, if you're listening, go over to YouTube. I like that. Go over to YouTube. And please subscribe to Amy and Eric's page. We're going to link it on our Facebook page. We'll play it on our Video. I didn't do anything yet because I wanted it to be surrounding the podcast to announce that. So please, our listeners, check out that song. And Amy, this is not your first protest song.
No, that's true. I wrote, way back in 2017, I wrote a song called The President Can't Read.
That's right.
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
It's just funny because that song at the time, it was also fresh, this feeling, it was almost like possible to feel creative about it and inspired, whereas, and it just shows like how how worn out I've become, so to go from that, I felt like it had some pretty good, turns of phrase and all that. And to go from that to vote that fucker out, which is just really kind of just like straight to the point. But I guess the time is not, it's poetry is kind of like, it's not the time.
Well, it's very punk rock. When I first heard that song, I hadn't realized, I thought it was older. I thought it was from George Bush time period. Wow. Because, I think of him as not reading, or the famous, he's reading the kids book when the buildings were hit in 9/11. And so I thought it was during that time. And then it made me think, there's been two presidents that have been like, to me, and to you, obviously, you're a very literary person. I mean, your writing and your storytelling is so surrounded with homage to famous pieces of literary works. And then actually literal works, your Philip Roth to Bob Dylan. And when I hear your lyrics, it's got to be the worst insult to those of us who read that somebody's not reading.
I know. It's, especially if they're just in this, like what used to seem like, the highest office and the position you could be in, and what children aspired to be when they grow up, and to just think that you could get away with just not even ever picking up a book, it's just such an insult.
Are you finding getting feedback from, younger people in your life about anything going on? How are they, what's your perspective on that? Do they feel pretty hopeless about the president, or are they?
I did a friend's college class the other day. I did a remote learning, a Zoom class, and just talked because they were doing a music writing class. But I think we talked more about the pandemic and just how that was kind of the focus. I just felt for them because I've gone in and spoken to this class, this class at SUNY, in person before, not the same kids, but and so it was just, here they were on this screen, and I just thought, like, gosh, they can't even like go hang out together, and how much that must suck. And they just said, it really does.
It does.
Yeah, that was kind of as far as we got at talking about the
current situation. That's pretty real too. And I mean, that's still linked to the leadership, that we're not able to figure out ways that we can make this work yet. Yeah. And, I think all of us want a little pep talk about the pandemic for sure.
Yeah.
So that's good things too. Oh my God.
It must be really hard as a musician when you can't tour. I mean, the one thing you need is an audience, and everybody has to stay inside.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I try to feel positive and think, well, I finally get to have time to work on things at home and not always be coming and going. And also, that it's great to play for people, but there's that constant pressure, especially when you do everything yourself, that you've got to like keep telling people about the shows, and you're booking shows, and you're trying to make sure everything's gotten sent that needs to be, and to promote the shows. So it's kind of a relief sometimes to not have to do all that and just the stress that goes with, worrying if anyone will come and all that. But I do just like sometimes just have these flashes of, missing playing, and also not just missing playing, but missing seeing other people play. I just was thinking, I was listening to this Ian Hunter song today and just thinking, like, you know, I haven't had my fix of I usually, you know, Eric and I have gotten to open shows for him, but also just always try to get to see him play because he's such an inspiration and hero. And just thinking, like, I haven't seen him, and, you know, it's been a year and a half, and, you know, I know that doesn't seem like very long, but just with no end in sight, I don't know, just want to see him play again. And it's like that with a lot of people.
And it happened so fast, too. Definitely. You know, the last show that I went to was, I went to see Joe Newberry and April Virch, or old time performers, in a nearby city of Guelph. And it was maybe a week after that everything just shut down.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, can't do that anymore.
Right. You didn't have time while those last gigs were going on to, you know, to value them extra, you know, that extra bit of, you know, just like appreciation, like, this isn't going to happen again for a while. It just kind of came on.
Yeah. I think we probably are all really starting to really appreciate how great it was to be near music, to see live music.
Yeah. And culture in general.
Yeah.
Here in Toronto, I was downtown last week, and it's the whole downtown core is dead. There's just nothing going on. Mm-hmm. And it's like, is this my city? This is the city I've lived in all my life. I don't even recognize it right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Similar here too. I mean, just so many restaurants just closing, and I mean, and concert venues closing up.
Well, you know, terrible. I'm lucky to be in the country,
yes,
in upstate New York, and got to go for a beautiful hike yesterday with the leaves all at their peak, and thankfully, like, there were a lot of people out, you know, just for being out in nature. It felt like, what are all these pesky people doing? Go away. But it was, you know, it could have been much worse. It could have been the weekend. So
I think everybody's just trying to get out of the house too.
Yeah.
And plus it's a beautiful time of year in your part of
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So just have to, you know, just like cling to these things that at least feel positive, like a chance. I'm usually not home at this time of year. Last year I was touring, driving all over the country, and and that's usually October. I'm usually playing somewhere. I'm appreciative to at least get to enjoy where I live.
Well, I hope this time does give us, I mean, I would say I feel a little bit more inspiration just from being rested, from not doing many of those kinds of activities that I normally would just get caught up in. Sometimes you don't even realize you've gone shopping too many times or gone out too many times, you know, and slowing down. Yeah. I mean, you know, we call it woodshedding. I mean, this is really the ultimate woodshedding. You know, I want to quickly say before I forget how much I love your album, The Old Guys.
The Old Guys. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's absolutely mind-blowing to me. You are such a great lyricist. I mean, obviously, your whole career has been a fascinating experience to listen to your lyrics and your voice. I love your voice. And the lyrics, there's so much mystery on The Old Guys, and there's something about it that it feels distilled, almost like the ideas came and maybe different than some of your albums that were maybe we might call more narrative, personally narrative. You know, I can hardly, except for Bob, obviously I read your book and I know who Bob is. I can't listen to that song without feeling happy, sad, because I have a Bob in my life too. You know, someone who inspired me when I was young and taught me how to go to, you know, which stores to go to and not go to.
isn't that amazing, like, you just, like, nobody tells you these things until somebody does.
Exactly. Do you feel like you've become that person? Are you more like that now too, that you're able to guide people? Hey, no, you got to go here, you got to go there, you must have that now.
I don't know, like, I all the years I lived in New York City, I probably felt like that person because that's seemed like such a part of being a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Was to be like, I know, you know, you don't know, I know. But I feel, you know, after years of living in the country, I feel maybe like I'm not that person anymore. I mean, but you know, there's still stuff I love and that I'm into, but I guess, you know, maybe I'm enjoy more like hearing what other people are into and not have to be the authority on everything.
Have you been able to write during COVID?
I have been. I've written, probably like a half dozen songs. You know, like maybe half of them I think are good. Mm. And like I will actually, aside from this, not even counting the protest song, but I have done some writing and recording, and that it actually feels good to have some time. Mm-hmm. To do that, I'm like writing and when I'm driving, like I do a lot of, just have to do so much driving, and that's, I'm always, recording stuff on my phone if I think up a lyric or a melody or something. But I have done some writing, and I'm trying to start another book. I'm just working on writing pieces for the, because I stopped Girl to City. I stopped it in the 90s.
Yeah.
After I'd finally gotten out my first solo album, and I felt like people were asking, why did you stop? Why didn't it keep going? And I kind of had a little epilogue where I filled in some of the last, two decades, but I really wanted to write another book. That's kind of more like leaving New York and going to the other places I've lived and learning. Like I said, I was, sort of the expert New Yorker for years, and that was so much a part of my identity. And so leaving that behind, I moved to Nashville in 1999, and that was a whole other experience. Mm. I wanted to, to kind of get into more in the way that I found, writing about my life. Like it just seemed, it wasn't just a one-off thing. I want to keep doing it forever, really.
I love that idea. That's fantastic.
Did you like Nashville?
Well, you'll find out when
you... we have no to spoilers. Wait for part two. Okay.
Well, no spoilers.
I think a beautiful thing I learned from writing about, the earlier part of my life was maybe when I started, I was almost thinking, I have a few scores to settle here. And I ended up just feeling like so much appreciation and love for even like the bad things and the bad people who I crossed paths with.
I totally get that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that, that as I write about my time in Nashville and beyond, that I can kind of process it and maybe kind of come to grips with, like what it was to be there and, why I went there. And I guess I sometimes felt like I was not a failure there, but I didn't, I got some of the things I wanted out of being there. I got a publishing deal and really, became more like an artist, I guess, than I felt like I was. But I never got any I wanted like a big country star to record all my songs. All these things I didn't really achieve, some of the things that I set out for, and kind of felt a bit of a failure and shame, walking away from there. But anyway, so it's all a part of the writing process, is to kind of like get through it all again from a distance,
right.
Kind of see what it all meant, that type
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you don't get in the next couple of years someone covering one of your songs and getting that hit, because I don't understand why. I mean, certainly I love your voice and I love your production, but I think somebody would be a damn fool not to cover one of your songs, because they are so unique and special. I mean, your songwriting is up there with Joni Mitchell and Taylor Swift for me. I mean, it's really incredible. I hope you know that, because it's stunning. And you're more accessible in so many ways. You're so easy to absorb. I mean, I laid on my bed the last couple of weeks now, looking at the ceiling, you know, lying in bed, looking at the ceiling, listening to an album is one of life's greatest pleasures. And you're the old guys. I mean, it delivered every time.
Oh, well, that's so nice.
So if anyone's a songwriter out there and a big pop star, come on, Beyonce, cover one of her songs.
Well, it's funny because you try to appreciate, like, as an artist or writer or whatever, musician, try to appreciate all the good things, and even to be able to, like, still be doing this is great. But, you know, like, I've been listening to this, it's like a bunch of Tom Petty interviews it's really interesting. It's done not in his voice, it's read by an actor, but okay. But you kind of get used to that. Mm-hmm. As any audiobook. But sure. But it's him talking about the early years and then just, you know, all the struggles, and then like having a hit record. And I guess, you know, like listening to that, I just thought, like, it's okay to feel like, you know, that's just like that one thing that, like, you know, still feels like it's missing. Like, you know, why can't I have that? Like, I still, is it wrong to still believe in that and still want, you know, to hear, like, you know, that like, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people like got into something that you created. And I guess, like you said, we've got 30 some thousand hits on Vote That Fucker
Absolutely.
Out. So there's 30,000 right there. So that is something, you know.
It is something. And I think that's a real feeling, that it's almost, you know what, we only talk to people, like, we hear about people who have had those hits,
right?
And they're living their life and they're buying their bling and their drip and their cars and everything. And we hear it afterwards, but we don't hear them go like, that rewarded me, you know? And right. I think there is something about that. You're playing into a vacuum. I often think if I had gotten famous when I was 18 or 19, I probably would have died. Because I was so crazy when I was young. And, you know, I liked my acid and my drinking and my partying. And so I could never really afford to be a rock star.
Right.
You know, and also I didn't learn what I learned. And I think that's why I really appreciate your most recent music, is it's got a taste of real life in it, of looking back on time. There's a kind of a wisdom in it. And that came from, you know, what makes us keep making artwork and music without that financial payoff. You know, that is actually a very mysterious, fascinating thing to me.
to me too, it really is forever fascinating. And I know, you know, like, and I've heard people say, and I feel the same way, like, you do it, you don't do it for that end. Mm. You don't do it to have, you know, acclaim or make a bunch of money. You're gonna do it anyway, but
it would just be nice
it would be nice.
But really, being able to live a creative life, what more could you really ask for in your life, in a way?
Yes, exactly. But hearing Tom say how great it felt, you know, that just made it seem like, you know, it's not shallow. It's not, you know, it's not, you're not being ungrateful by wanting that, you know, or just think, you know, holding out some kind. I mean, I heard Dolly Parton say, and this was, you know, probably back about like 10 or 15 years ago, that she still wanted to have another hit, you know, that how great that would feel, and how she's always like aiming for, you know, she's
Dolly's really a superhero.
She is. And so I thought, you know, she's had these amazing hits, and, you know, everybody loves her, but she's still always, you'll always have that like hungry part of you, I guess that keeps you, you know, and it's just, part of it is just wanting to connect, you know. And
I was about to say, yeah, it's about the connection, isn't it? And that kind of brings me to kind of picking your brain about writing. And I know people have asked you before. Sonny Rollins said something about improv. I'm just going to quote him here. That's just easier. Improvisation is the ability to create something very spiritual, something of one's own. Now, that seems like a good enough reason to want to write music and be successful, because doesn't that mean you're connecting and you're finding out other people are getting that from the song, you hope? I don't know.
I think so.
And what is your experience when you're writing? I know you've said that it kind of starts coming to you. You know, you'll think of something, it starts clicking into you or something. Is it transformative?
I guess it, I really think it is. I think, you know, one thing I found in Nashville, sometimes, you know, I'd do co-writing and we'd come up with a, you know, they'd call it like writing to the title. Like you'd kind of come up with this great phrase and you then have to like make the lines fit so that you would end up back at this phrase. But the thing and I'm sure that it happens in a natural organic way sometimes that you get to a higher plane that way. But a lot of times even if I have a sort of a hook or a good phrase in mind, I don't really know till I've gotten the whole song written, like what it was going to be about.
Interesting.
And I don't, you know, like, so I wrote this song fairly recently. It was to a title, a writer friend, Gina Arnold, she's a music writer out on the West Coast. And she had this list of discarded story titles by Raymond Chandler. He never used them, but they were like, you know, they were just really great combinations of words and real evocative. And so she kind of threw it out there for people to either write a story or a song based on one of these titles. And so I picked this one called Here It Is Saturday. I just liked the sound of it and thought, oh, well, that'll be fun. I can come up with something to that. But so I got it going. Well, of course, it was all about, you know, how like every week the news cycle has just been like, like it just starts out saying Sunday was a drag, you know, and then Monday, you know, like each day kind of, and you can't believe how bad it is. But then, you know, when I finally got to the chorus, the last line of it, well, here it is Saturday. On Saturday, I get back up again. I'm stronger on Saturday. Can't let the bastards win, you know. And that was kind of like that the line about not, you know, just like can't let the bastards win was really kind of the point of the song. But I didn't know till I'd written all the way through, you know, two verses and a chorus what I was gonna say. That I was gonna say like we're stronger than, you know, than this cycle that just keeps going on and getting worse.
Is that often the case that you don't discover what your song's really about until the end?
Yeah, I think that can really be the way, like with the Philip Roth song, that one just kind of all flowed out, and I knew that it was about, you know, Philip Roth talking about, you know, Bob Dylan getting the Nobel Prize, but I didn't have that. I needed like one sort of grand, like classical sounding word, and I took a walk and then I was like Spartacus. we're all like he's just one of the people laboring, you know, in this yoke of, you know, anyway, like, you know, I don't think that was the point of the song, but it just kind of like brought it all home for me somehow.
Well, and there's a bit of an answer in there too, in my opinion, Amy, that the line about you're wearing the laurel for us is kind of why we listen to music. We want someone to put that laurel on us during a song.
That's it, exactly. And Spartacus had that laurel on.
Exactly.
Very good. Yeah. I forgot about that line. Yes.
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes a song really successful is when, you know, you can make it very personal and about your experience and your life, but when you're listening to it and you realize that, oh, this is also about our lives. This is about my life, your life. And you can compare the songwriter's perspective and experience with your own. I really felt that when I heard Don't Ever Change.
That's great. Yeah, I think those, I mean, that is the best when those little details somehow that felt so concrete and related to my experience actually, you know, that they open up those little portals into the other, into the listener's experience. And that, I think that was something that really surprised me about my book. I thought, you know, like writing about my own life, I didn't realize like how, like that you guys both said you related to your own life, and that like the greatest compliment and it made it feel like so worthwhile. Like it wasn't just about me, you know, cause it's hard. All of these things you feel like, well, who do I think I am? You know, like, you know, how egotistical am I to do this, to like talk about, you know, myself and my, you know, but yeah, you do it because it opens up something, and hopefully, you know, like ideally opens up something in the listener that lets them reflect on their self.
Totally. And when you find out you've done something universal, it takes it away from your own ego, I think.
Yeah,
you know, definitely. So it, you know, there you go, you did make a portal for us. And many of your songs are portals. So we get to kind of put on your avatar and relate to it, you know. You know, on a more, I don't know if this counts or not. I know you do mention a lot of literary things. Is there anything you want to turn us on to or tell us that you're watching or binging, or have you been binging during the pandemic? Or
definitely just getting through you know, plenty of Netflix shows and movies and a lot of I usually, when I drive a lot, I listen to books, but been doing some reading, of course. I guess watched this John Lennon and Yoko Ono documentary the other day. It was just really, there was so much footage of them. That was really good. There was a show called The Vow, which
I watched it.
I didn't think it was done that well.
I don't either.
It was so compelling. I mean, I definitely fell asleep at least once during the episode. Yeah. But at the same time, it's a fascinating story, and it happened like right up the road from us. So part of it was like, and they went to Albany.
Yes.
So that was, you know, one. I don't know what's that. The last episode was just this past week, so I don't know what's gonna take
its place. That's right. That's right. I watched it. I think it was three episodes too long. Personally,
yeah,
they could have condensed it a bit more. But I'm from Vancouver, so I kept thinking, what? Vancouver.
I know that was kind of a wild, that was
and cool. How did they decide to put branding on their body? Like, I just, it's too much. But I got into that too. It's kind of a guilty pleasure. I watched The Vow too.
That's good. And I think, you know, my daughter's been staying with us, and so we go on her, she's got the Criterion Channel. So we, you know, try to like get something a little more like highbrow in there.
I like that.
And I, the other night watched, they had Agnes Varda films on there. Ooh. And this amazing movie called Vagabond, which I remember coming out, like, I remember seeing it in like 1982 or when I was like I was a little older, but you remember, like,
I remember being this
girl, and she, you know, nowadays they'd say like she was so badass, you know, she just like didn't care about anyone or anything, and so it was great. Like, it's very sad in the end, but it's great revisiting some of those French films that I used to love.
Oh God, me too. And that's I just love that about your perspective very much. it's been just great to touch base with you today, and I'm so thrilled. Please, also, your book is going on to podcast, your memoir.
I spent the first 20 weeks of the pandemic record every week. I did a different chapter.
Yeah, I think that's so exciting, and I hope our listeners either get the book or do the podcast, because it sounds amazing.
I think it turned out really, I loved doing the podcast. So it's just Girl to City.
Did you put your music in there, interspersed appropriate music during it or anything?
I never knew what I was going to put in there, but as I was as I was reading each chapter, I just go like, I found stuff that I'd never posted anywhere or published, and I recorded a couple of things. Like I wrote a little piece of music for the one called like Gene Seberg in Breathless.
Perfect.
I didn't have anything so I just like wrote a little song that went with that. And it was really, I loved doing it. I was so sad when the podcast when it ended, but
well, you're gonna do part two.
Speaking of ending, Amy, Zoom is going to cut us off.
I'm going to say goodbye. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been great to talk to you.
He walked into the party looking just like he had in the past. He came up to me. Tried to say something, he said, girl, shut your mouth. We're playing Papa Was a Rolling Stone. Last night, I was dancing with Jerry Ramone. He was cool in his leather jacket and his little dark shades. He started dancing around, I tried to copy every move. Brushed me off, and they played hanging.